Welcome to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers, and every week I'll be interviewing a special guest talking about how to set up a business or how to launch a new product in the local market. Welcome to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Lewis Holland from Discount If. Today, we'll be discussing how to build a network of partners and strategic alliances. So, why should startups actually look to create strategic alliances?
Well, when you start your own startup, you start from zero. Generally, there's other things going on in the market, there are other players, competitors. The way I tend to see it is, in the early days, you think you might be able to make 100% of something. But as you go along, it's more likely to be a percentage of something is better than nothing.
So these strategic alliances are sort of more friends to help you up the ladder?
Yes. I mean, in the very early days, you might have an idea. You might be on your own. You might be with some people. You might start building a product. But the thing is, to get to a client or to a consumer, it's not always a direct route. You might need a marketing agency. You might need a journalist to write an article. Be it what may for whatever you're doing, but you don't tend to get things done just on your own. It's very hard to do that.
So it's sort of recognizing your weaknesses, but also recognizing somebody else's strengths?
Yes. I mean, there's also a thing like with my own startup, the partnerships or allegiances we're trying to get towards are ones that could potentially buy us at the end of the day.
Okay.
So in a sense, from day one, we start making some partnerships. It might seem as like I'm forking out money or I'm giving them a percentage of my business, but at the end of the day, they might give you an exit. They might actually buy you out.
I see. So what should you be looking for in these partners? Is it always somebody that's going to potentially buy you out, or are there other reasons to partner?
I think on the ground, you can start off with, you know, thinking ideally who they should be. What ends up happening, though, especially in the early days, is it's likely to be someone you know, or someone you know introducing them or you to someone they know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's likely to be someone quite close in your network. It's good to have a strategy, but stick with your gut. If it feels good, then it probably makes sense. If it doesn't feel as good or very unnatural, then probably there's something wrong. I mean, you know your product, you know your market, so gut helps.
Gut helps, okay. And so in this strategic alliance, obviously you need to take some precautions and potentially sign a contract, I'm guessing. There must be some sort of legal agreement to make sure that they don't run away with your product and they actually do some activity.
Yes, I mean, it would be helpful to have a friend who's a lawyer. I had many, but I used none. I tried to do things myself. I was pretty silly, I think, and stupid. But advice I'd give is get simple stuff prepared in advance. There are classic things like non-disclosure agreements, which do exactly what you've mentioned,
mm-hmm.
That if you share an idea with someone, they can't really share it with anyone else.
Okay.
It's hard for you to protect nonetheless. But in the early days, especially like a startup, it's probably 10% the idea and 90% the execution, but you're in a mindset where you think that it's 90% the idea and 10% the execution.
What other things should this agreement or this contract cover? So you've got something along the lines of protection. What else would there be?
It obviously depends. Mm-hmm. I tend to like to use these one-pager agreements which talk about the topic we're going to speak about. So if we're going to speak about marketing with yourself, Monique, it puts one-liner that we're going to talk about marketing activities. There'll be some information about the company, some about yourself, and it's a signature from each party. Keeping it simple for the early days helps.
Okay.
For strategic partnerships, once it starts to grow, you get more information. You might see that they want to resell your product to someone else. So that's when you might want to have a particular agreement for that.
Okay.
Some might just want to put you on your website, and that's just it. Don't really need an agreement there unless you're making some revenues for it and they want some affiliate agreements there.
Okay. So there's financial implications then, or do you think some people just use you as a badge of honor, or you can just use them as a badge of honor and then not really be benefits, per se, tangible benefits?
let's put it this way. I like to talk practical and what happens in the real world.
Okay.
There are a lot of what ifs whenever you're speaking to a party. Mm-hmm. It tends to work easier if what you're going to be doing over the next, I don't know, few weeks or a month or a couple of months is what you agree on. Foreseeing what happens 1 year, 2 years, 3 years is much harder for a startup that's doing something relatively innovative. Doing deals with the government, you might need to go for a 3 year deal or a 4 year deal, but it might take you 3 years to make that deal anyway. So I tend to see things as keeping it practical, work on things that you can see in the near future, and then leave the opportunity to adapt at a later point. I've gone in terms of, for example, mistakes that mm-hmm. I've done. I've made agreements that are 30 pages long. You know, save my ass on many things that could happen. Mm-hmm. But it took me so long to make the agreements. I think it actually costed me like £5,000-£10,000, you know.
Worth of your time.
Worth of my time, which I could have used for getting another partner, making things happen, making revenue.
So do you actually have somebody to manage all of your strategic alliances? Because they sound like they could be quite time-consuming and also quite important.
Over time, I've learned that I've kind of built a network. So I've got some people who are lawyers in particular areas for partnerships, some who are a bit more specialized in HR. You negotiate with some of the bigger law firms, get some free stuff.
That time and services, that kind of thing they give you?
Yes, you need to haggle. Mm. I mean, from the service providers, there's the standard pitch of, yeah, I'm small, I have no money, but someday I'm going to be big, so maybe that's when it's going to pay off for you guys. There are also some supporting functions at Takeoff Startup Incubator.
Okay, here at the university.
Uh-huh. They've put some documents. I mentioned the non-disclosure mm-hmm. agreement before. But there are other stuff that you need for setting up a company.
Okay.
That they're building. I mean, they're generic. Mm-hmm. Might need to be adapted, but it's starting somewhere.
Okay, it gives you the baseline and then you can tailor it towards your individual needs.
Yeah.
Okay, and what about sort of, for your business, distribution channels, that kind of partnership, because you distribute other people's products, essentially you'll sell other people's products. So
yes.
how do you go about doing that, or how do you go about getting in with the big guys? How do you go about getting them to pay attention to, you know, a startup from Malta, essentially?
I think the main thing is just going out there, getting stuck in. There's a lot of stuff that sounds simple. Mm-hmm. It sounds oversimplistic, but in reality, you only manage to get things done if you're talking, you're phoning, you're emailing, you're doing all the hard grit, sweat, mm-hmm. getting out on the radio here. This is the first one for me. Actually, second, sorry. But you have to get out there. Mm. There's a lot of strategic stuff and smart stuff you can be doing.
Tell us a bit more about that kind of thing. Give some of other startups a bit of a leg up. How would they be able to maneuver and negotiate their way into talking to bigger companies?
I mean, the way I'm doing it, it's not necessarily the best way, but the way I'm doing it is I generally tend to find a person that's the right person that I need to speak to on the other side, because a big company might have hundreds of employees. Mm-hmm. Then I try to find something that we have in common.
Okay.
Just an example from this week, I spoke to a guy who's at a very big company at a football club mm-hmm. in the UK, in the Premier League. I saw that he did a startup a year ago. It seemed like it failed, but I was pretty sure he knew how tough it was being in a startup. So I just started up a chat with him about startups, what it's like, the hell, the heaven. he's at a football club that I don't particularly like, so I had a stab at him and was actually just having a regular, let's say, coffee conversation mm-hmm. and letting business come a bit later. So that's one of the strategies. I wouldn't say it's a smart one, but it feels easier.
And it's natural to you because of your personality. So,
yes.
you're saying, go a bit with your gut feel.
Yes.
At the end of the day, these are strategic relationships and strategic partnerships. And
I leverage also my experiences. I mean, I've done a hell of a lot of sports, semi-amateur. I've done a triathlon. I've done cycling. Mm-hmm. I've done running. You name it. And I tend to use those to my advantage because I check their Twitter, check their Facebook.
I see, okay.
So have they done windsurfing? I've done that too, you know. I'd say I was crap or if I was good, it depends on the sport.
Because we've been talking about targeting your customer and actually realizing that, you know, the somebody you're targeting at work is also the dad of three, or
yes,
a single guy that likes riding yes. his bike or whatever. So it's actually getting into the personal, because people buy people at the end of the
yes.
day is really what you're saying.
And that's something which you might think like, mm-hmm. oh my God, I need to speak to Google, or I need to speak to Vodafone, or whoever.
Do you know someone at Google? I'm trying to get in there.
I get called by them nearly every other month because they want to sell me advertising space
okay.
through Google. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's person to person, and that really matters. I mean, I've done the bad stuff too. I've called up big companies, sold what I'm doing straight away, sold my soul, and they're like, no.
And that's it, put the phone down,
put the phone down, I didn't get an email, I didn't get a contact, and that's the worst case scenario. If you're like really thinking of super selling your business, you might actually put your business off on a tangent and not get any traction whatsoever.
So lots of people make sure they have, you know, beautiful websites, glossy brochures, attendance at smart fairs, etc., etc. You're saying actually have all that, but try and find the guy, try and find the direct contact.
To start with, yes. Excellent. I mean, then the other smart layers starts to become, yes, do you have the right landing page? Is there something that that potential client can test or tweak or see the advantage? Mm-hmm. Why is they're seeing your website? Do you have anything in media? So are you trustworthy? Because mm-hmm. a startup, if you don't have a website or if you don't have a company set up, at some points with bigger companies, they might be, who the hell are you?
Yes.
So unless you got an invite through someone that knows you, then you need to start thinking about these trust factors, I tend to call them.
And so initially, how do you find the people? Do you read the press? You go through LinkedIn? You go through your, the press that is related to your company? How do you actually find these individuals?
I mean, just this last week, as an example, there's some random things that I do on LinkedIn, which is a platform or a social network similar to Facebook, but for working people who have their profile over there. I tend to comment on posts there if the topic is interesting.
So you join groups and you find people then through that medium?
In simple terms, I just chat away on topics that might be vaguely similar to what we're doing.
Okay.
Just get involved. You never know who's observing there. They might want to add you and get a chat going. But, you know, just simple stuff, nothing complicated
okay.
there. We also tend to put out content through that platform and also through media as well, newspapers, about what we're doing. Maybe with a slightly, fun tone to it. I mean, our brand has a bit of a fun tone.
Yes, absolutely.
And I tend to use that to our advantage.
Uh-huh.
We do hard calling too. So we send, create a list of sites or businesses that we want to call. We start to find information about who the right person that we want to
okay.
get to is. If we can't get to them directly, we call the customer service, but ask for them. So if I know you're the marketing person at Google I want to reach, I might call customer service at Google and say, can I speak to Monique? They might say, Monique who? I'm like, Monique Chambers from e-commerce marketing.
As if you should know her.
Yeah, exactly. So you pretend like you've already got a relationship
yes.
with that person. And they're like, yeah, okay, hold on, we'll put you through.
That's a good one.
Sometimes it works straight away, sometimes it doesn't. They might put you through to someone in finance, who's the worst person in your case that you want to speak to. And he says, no, but at least maybe through him you might get the email contact for yourself that I might not have.
Okay.
We're also doing quite a lot of stuff around strategic partnerships. So speaking to marketing agencies.
Okay.
Overseas,
then, these people are going to spread your word for you?
Yes, so we go to marketing agencies. They might not be doing what we're doing at the moment, but for marketing agencies, they work with a lot of clients and businesses mm-hmm. and very diverse. And they always like to see if they can do something different. So we sell that to them as a potential opportunity to resell it to some other clients of theirs.
Okay, so their clients can get their products on your portfolio, essentially.
Spot on. So we're trying different angles, and the conversations are different. I mean, there are funny ones. Like, last Friday, the last call I had was I phoned a French marketing agency that do a lot of innovative stuff in e-commerce in France. everything was in French, but I said, hey, let me have a go. This is the guy I want to reach. I called him up, and I don't know, the secretary or customer service girl could barely speak in English. But as soon as she started to speak in English, she was laughing so much that I was laughing. And in the end, she got me through to the right guy. So I thought there might be something to it, that we might want to start phoning more companies in France. Just to start off with something soft, funny. Do you speak in English? No. Okay, I speak a bit of French.
And let's try see how your French, this... and the humor then breaks them down, and
exactly.
they put you through.
Like... Exactly.
so, go for the weak spot. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Lewis Holland from Discount If. We're discussing how and why startups should create strategic alliances. So are there financial implications to these alliances at all? Do you pay anything up front, or is it just a percentage of sales? How does it work?
I mean, depends on your negotiating skills.
You give them a discount if yeah, they get you, spot on. get you a deal.
When you're nothing, you tend to lean towards offering something for free for that other company, either advice or sitting with them in the office, working with them, seeing what the problem is and how you can solve it, and building your product at the same time. So in the early days, there's a lot of those agreements that you might want. Maybe not something financial, okay. but you're spending so much time from them, getting so much feedback that it's actually helping you build a better product at the end of the day, or service for that matter. But as time goes along, I mean, they can be the same people that start recommending you to other potential clients who are likely to be clients that pay. I think that's the best way to build in the early days. Maybe get close to potential clients that can help you out. If you think you can charge and you can negotiate your way there, awesome. That's the best case. If you can't, then at least get their time, get their input, actually help you shape the product and service that targets other clients like them.
And are there relationships the other way around, where you're trying to get them to sell your product, and so they are expecting a payment for you to join their club, essentially, their strategic alliance program?
Again, it depends on your negotiating skills, I think. There's a very good program called Suits. If you want to watch that TV program, kind of, it's lawyers, but they do negotiating all the time. They always win somehow. So it can create, yeah, they can create a good vibe for you getting into that negotiating deals. But back to the real world, I mean, essentially, it depends what you're going to get from those. If there's something that's worth paying for, I'd probably think about it once, twice, three times in the very early days. If it's a strategic group of, I don't know, if you're doing something in marketing and it works for marketing agencies, and marketing agencies only work with three other service providers, but then they've got 1,500 clients, which are exactly what you're looking at, then maybe it's worth paying. You can do some simple maths. But negotiation has to be a skill you learn on the go when you're a startup. It's important, ideally, not to pay, and actually get the others to pay for you instead.
So what's the best sort of deal you think you've made so far?
Let me think.
Puts you on the spot a little bit.
Yes.
Is there one where it's either it's just been the most fun, or it's tipped you into something like a major football club or with a major supplier of, you know, goods?
I mean, I think the best deal that I've got going at the moment, I mean, I can share some brand names and stuff because it's mostly in the UK and, you know, in Malta, we can spread the word, but I just put out a post to some old people I used to work with at Betfair, and I said, does anyone know someone from Sports Direct, that quite a lot of people know, or Kidbag, who are the biggest competitors in the UK. And someone came and they told me, yes, I know someone at Kidbag. It's a bit of a long introduction, but let me do it. So I got introduced to someone who introduced me to someone, classic long story. 3 months later, I spoke to that someone at Kidbag. 2 months later, we're actually close to making the biggest deal ever.
Fantastic.
It takes long, there was nothing super strategic in the beginning of thinking, how am I actually going to get to that person? Because I had exhausted those channels. I had tried and tried and tried. And then I got tired, so I just posted it on my page and said, does anyone know someone there?
Yeah, hands up, help me.
And I got lucky. But I wouldn't rely on luck and stuff.
No, and also other people's contacts, because people generally don't like to just hand out their contacts.
Yes, yes.
Very lightly.
Yes.
Especially because sometimes these relationships can go sour, and then it could come back to them. So have you had a relationship go sour? How do you handle it? What should one look out for? You know, the warning signs that something's not quite going to work in your favour?
Nothing has gone sour just yet for me.
Good.
I had one partnership with an outsourced development company in Poland. I really like them. I still do. But as a company, we needed to insource and get developers within the team to grow a bit quicker. We kind of shook hands and departed, but said, listen, if there are projects we need to do, let's keep in contact. So that I'm happy with. I've got something going on actually these last couple of weeks. I've got a potential opportunity in Australia.
Wow.
It sounds pretty big and massive, but the person I'm dealing with, I've met in person. I know them reasonably well, but the partnership is not very well scoped. So
you want to get that down in writing just in case you...
Yes, and at the moment he's talking about a lot of very big things. I don't really have an idea what's going to happen with it over the next month or two. So I'm in a space where I know it could potentially be huge. But I don't know how to go about it because I don't know what's going to happen practically.
But in your gut, you know there's something not quite right. So it's better to document and go back to having an agreement in place, something that you can fall back on so you can protect yourself.
Exactly. So what I'm trying to do with that is get onto safe ground, as you're saying. I'm using a few lawyer contacts and trying to get an agreement which at least gives me a basis. Maybe it's not fully concrete. And
so really you're sort of protecting yourself because it can be exciting, people can come up with all sorts of ideas and opportunities for you, but it's really go back to basics, protect yourself, have a contract in place, have some boundaries.
Yes.
There,
I mean, in essential terms, covering your bases in the beginning can just be, listen, this is my company, this Discountif, this is Monique, we know each other. Monique is interested in reselling ourselves or our services in Australia. If we're going to do a deal, then let's do a separate agreement. So it's kind of an initial, you know, lawyer-type agreement.
So like you said, one of these sort of one-pagers should suffice.
Yes.
And should you ever have exclusive relationships? Or does it depend on the size of deal, or in the early stages you don't know which deal is going to be the best deal? If somebody is that keen, perhaps there's something you haven't seen in your own business plan.
It depends what industry you're working, what product, what service, and also I mentioned again your negotiating skills. I've worked in the gaming industry before with Betfair, and they used to do exclusive deals with these gaming houses, so they'd produce a new game. And Betfair would want to be the only ones that use this game with their customers before anyone else.
Right, I see.
So they would even fund the game in advance, get some revenue shares when it's going up on Betfair. But obviously the game provider has to be a good team. They have to be doing something different and awesome and have to have good negotiating skills to get Betfair to pay for it.
So that could be like a limited exclusivity for 120 days or something.
Yes,
until,
and that's exactly how they used to do them. The first 3 months, then the game provider could sell it to other websites too.
Excellent. Okay, so it's really strategic alliances sound like a great thing to be able to deliver services that you can't provide yourself in-house, and also deliver routes to market that you may not necessarily have, or products to market, but making sure you have a deal in place to protect yourselves and them, and for future reference.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's better to have a percentage of something than 100% of nothing. That's the final thought.
So just before we wind up this interview, you mentioned quite a few times your negotiating skills and how important they are in settling these deals and alliances. Can you give us a few tips on the best things to look for, how to train yourself in negotiating skills?
Probably if I share those tips, then the people listening might be the people I'm dealing with
no,
later.
Please, please.
So I don't think it's something which is, it depends. To some people it comes naturally, and I think in Malta culturally, I'd say it's more common than probably somewhere in, I don't know, Estonia or Finland, for example. So we're used to haggling our way, we're small, we don't have a lot of resources, got a lot of people selling property, even though they might have a full-time job. So there are people who are using these negotiating or entrepreneurial skills at the end of the day.
Okay, and is it a bit of tenacity and people reading skills, you think, are the highest on the agenda?
I mean, what has helped for me is, I mean, I played poker quite a lot. That really helps because you tend to read people, you kind of know what's in it financially because there's a pot of money to be won. So it's a kind of a simple game that kind of represents some...
And you're working out what could happen if
exactly,
all the time.
So. Exactly. Which is the same when you're in a startup. You might have 20 things that you could be doing or seem like you should be doing. Which one am I going to do? Each one has different people on the other side and how to make a deal with them. But it actually just... give it a go, make a phone call, see if you're managing to get something in your favor.
And perhaps take some time in between conversations and emails. Don't react to everything immediately so you can do your what ifs and what ifs.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Seems like a good negotiator. But at the end of the day, it's kind of working out what's the plus for the other party, what's the plus for yourself. Making sure that it sounds like a plus for the other person. It has to sound like it, at least.
Okay.
Not necessarily do it. Like, doing it comes later, but the
sounding,
like, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. So that's it for this week. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to myself, Monique Chambers, here on Entrepreneur Clinic on Campus FM, and Lewis Holland of Discount If. Next week, I'll be talking to Nathan Faruja about motivation and how to maintain it during the difficult phases of your startup. Please join us then. Thank you.
You've been listening to Entrepreneur Clinic with me, Monique Chambers. The programme is aired every Wednesday on Campus FM at 9:30 a.m. and repeated on Thursdays at 1:30 p.m. Join us again next week to hear more about your journey in starting up a new business or launching a new product.